This is gonna be cool.
The topics and opinions expressed on the Dudes and Beer podcast are intended for an audience of 18 and up and are solely those of the host and guest. They neither reflect the opinions or values of either the sponsors of Dudes and Beer or your mother. I mean, seriously. Have you ever heard these guys? They'll talk about anything.
Whoa, hey, you think they're gonna show it?
They'll probably just blur it out.
Whoa, check it out, Beavis.
Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
That's what I'm talking about right there. How's everybody doing tonight? How's everybody doing? I am Chris Jordan, your host. Welcome to episode 79 of Dudes and Beer.
Yeah.
We are here at the Cave in Austin Music Rooms. With me, as always, is Stephen Bishop, Nelson Kugel.
Yo, yo.
How you boys doing tonight?
We've
just been kicking
going
it back.
Great. We're a bunch of daisies.
Had a beverage or two, you know, getting ready for the show and really talking about stuff. And tonight, we're kind of doing a double shot. We're going to start off the show talking about this rage of synthetic drugs that's going around. There have been more reports of people going to the ER and everything else from mass use of K2 and spice, things like that. So we're going to talk about that, the inherent dangers of it, as well as getting into a vinyl night doing the album Moira by the artist Monad. Whenever we come back from this message from our sponsor.
Hey everybody, Chris Jordan, host of the Dudes and Beer podcast here. Has this ever happened to you? Tired of looking in your rearview mirror after a couple of drinks with friends or worrying about no-refusal weekends and DUI stops? Are you planning a night on the town and want an easy, safe way to get around while still having fun? Well, Fare is the ride service for you. Simply download the easy-to-use and free Fare app from the Google Play Store or iTunes Marketplace and use promo code DUDES10 every time you ride with Fare to save 10% off your ride. Have a Fare driver you liked riding with? You can not only give them a review and tip, but you can add them to your preferred drivers list on your Fare app and request them every time you ride with Fare. You can schedule rides with Fare to pick you up immediately or as far as 30 minutes to 7 days in advance, eliminating the need for last-minute calls and allowing you to pre-schedule pickups in locations other than your home city. Perfect for those traveling for business or for fun. So don't forget to stop on by and download that free Fare app and use the coupon code DUDES10 every time you ride with Fare to get 10% off your ride. That's right, don't forget, the coupon code is DUDES10. So be like Dudes and Beer, everybody. Party safe, use Fair, and drink responsibly.
And we are back. So, yeah, this Steve-O was the one that brought this to my attention. I'd been so busy rebooting the Austin Hop Mods website over the weekend and doing stuff that I didn't even have a chance to keep up with a lot of the news on Feedly and everything else, the app that I use. But Steve-O brought to my attention a local situation. Oof. Where how many people were taken to the emergency room?
53 people wow. This week was reported on local news to the ER.
Yeah, that's crazy. And all at one time. So obviously there was a party or something like that going on.
Right.
It was being passed around. And, you know... Here's the thing with the synthetic drug spice and all that kind of stuff. There are some organic options out there. There are some natural herbs that you can use in combination. The stuff that you want to stay away from is the stuff with chemicals on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what they use is a lot of THC mimickers, things like that, that kind of fall into the research drug pharmaceutical range.
Mm-hmm.
And they work really hard, the FDA and the FBI, on keeping track of this stuff. And every year you hear about another 15, 20 compounds that hit. But if you watch the documentaries on the stuff, you can also see that
Viceland has one.
Yeah,
I did. I've seen the Viceland.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, watching where they mix it. Like the disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like.
Well, and
areas.
I will admit the fact that I knew people who made it. I myself had a herbal blend that I used for a while. And most people use it because they're on paper, they're on probation, something like that. And they use weed as some kind of maintenance before they go to bed, and it can be tough.
It's a good alternative or cheaper alternative.
Well, and the problem is these chemicals that are being used to put on these natural herbs are untested. They don't go through tests. They don't go through anything. So that's the danger that you're dealing with. Yes. And whenever you're talking about how rapidly the technology changes, that's how rapidly the formula changes and the packaging doesn't.
Right.
It's new stuff being sold in the same old packaging.
Yeah, they're changing it every fucking time.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's really gotten to a point. I've seen somebody have a straight-up panic attack using stuff that I was using at the time. You know, I've used the synthetic stuff. And there was one that I used specifically. They don't make it anymore. Crazy Space. That was great. It was phenomenal. But... Yeah, I don't know. The stuff that's going around now,
right.
It's totally different. I knew people who made it, so it was a little different. I knew the process that they were using.
I've seen some videos lately on just recently the epidemic here in Austin over the past week of people, you know, that have smoked and had bad reactions. And there's video that, man... These people, they're pretty much incoherent, and they're doing a lot of strange movements. A lot of them end up with like their clothes off or something in public, and it, they like don't have control over their body. You know?
Well, and you know what it reminds me of, even talking about other synthetics, is the epidemic that happened a couple years ago with bath salts. Whenever that was going around, you know, and it was supposed to be like the new designer form of cocaine, you know, that wasn't testable on a test, everything else. But people were using it, and oh my God, the reactions, like, you know, there was one guy that was caught trying to eat a dude's face in Miami, you know, just all kinds of crazy stories. And you heard about all kinds of people ODing on it and having to go to the emergency room with like fibrillations. You know, it does kind of get to the point with either one, and there are even documentaries on that where people were like, "Nah, I got to use this amount every day." You know, like this is what I use to maintain, and it's just scary. Wow. You know, to see, because it's something that was available like at local head shops and stuff like that. So as long as you were 18, you could go get it.
Wow. And I've noticed doing the research and seeing the documentaries and stuff on this stuff is like it's kind of like demographic or in a way or whatever, that it's in particular parts of towns where it's like, you know, low income and stuff. They're saying that it's a cheaper alternative. They say you can go buy a bag of this like Kush, potpourri, spice, whatever you.
For like $15.
Yeah,
$10.
They said even in some places it was $5. They said.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I used to be able to get Kush at a dollar store over near my buddy's house, and it was like $7 for a bag, something like that.
As cheap as a dollar a joint. As cheap as that.
Yeah, and you know, you have to consider. I'd much rather smoke reefer than that.
Oh,
most definitely.
Yeah.
A lot of states are really starting to wise up. There was just a study that was done that was interesting that I was reading today. It's one of the first ones where they've actually shown blood constriction in the brain, in the same area as Alzheimer's and stuff like that, in people that smoke marijuana. So it was one of the first studies done that really showed that. But other than that, there are amazing health benefits, and they're starting to legalize recreational all over the country. Colorado just did, and they've been reporting record sales in taxes for that. And I mean like six times liquor sales
Wow.
in marijuana. So It's definitely a growth industry, and it's something.
I met a gentleman last night who walked into the to the restaurant, and he came up to the register. He had his little like 7-year-old daughter with him, you know, and he was real talkative and everything, and he got on talking about how he was from, you know, Colorado. He moved from Colorado and talked about the, you know, legalization or whatnot of marijuana and stuff like that, and he was into, I guess, making
the oil.
Yeah. And so he's here in Texas kind of doing it, and he was just saying that he was like, "Oh, Texas, this is the next one. It's going to happen, you know. It's just going to happen." And
yeah, I can see it easily happening within the next 5 years here. The tax revenue coming off of it is way too much. We're operating in a surplus. It would do nothing but, and especially being the cancer center that we are, I could especially see it going medical within the next 3, and possibly not fully recreational, but decriminalized.
Right.
Within the next 5, to where, you know, there are places that you can go. And that's what most people don't realize, even with the legalization of marijuana, even with the full recreational legalization of marijuana, is it's not like a cigarette. It's the same as a beer. You know, you can't take a 12-pack to the local park and hang out and drink a 12-pack. You can't do that. You can't go to the local park and light up a joint. Like, either way, you will be given a ticket for public intoxication.
Has to still be, responsibly, right?
Yeah, you know? You know, it's meant to be used in your home. It's meant to be used at respectable establishments that purvey it, things like that. And there are places that are starting to allow marijuana in the Denver area, stuff like that.
This customer, I think, if I remember right, was from Denver or lived there. Actually, was from here, born. But as he was in Denver, he said he was leaving a concert, and he was walking, and he had a bag of weed with him, and, of course, his paraphernalia or whatnot. And there was a bicycle cop or whatever and got him, you know, pulled him over or, you know, stopped him. And he said all he did was take the bag, dump it out, and throw the thing out or whatever, and left. And that was it. And he was like, he even asked him, like, "Is that it? You're not going to, like, do nothing to me?" And he was like, "Man, if this was Texas..." And he was like, "But it was like, no." Yeah. He was like, it's simple over there. He was like, you might lose a little bit of your stash, but it's, you don't even get a ticket, you know?
Yeah.
It's simple.
Well, and, you know, to go back to the synthetic thing, to me, the danger of it is how rapidly these things come out. And even as someone who worked festivals and stuff like that where hallucinogens were there, you know, I'm not going to lie, they were around. And to know that now one of the big things to buy whenever you go to them is the testing kits. That's one of the things that my friend sold whenever he went to festivals was testing kits, so that you could test to make sure that what you just bought is authentic.
I think that's the smartest thing you can
that
do.
That it's real.
Yeah.
Because there are so many synthetic drugs out there now that mimic LSD and stuff like that that are just straight up research chemicals that people are dripping on cellophane or on a sugar cube and saying it's acid. And it may have the same effect, but who knows what else it has in it. You know, it may not be the true... pure lysergic that, you know, is what it is, and you're not getting what you're looking for, and you may get something that's dangerous to you, or more dangerous than the LSD. So
it's like, you know, getting high is one thing, and having fun, that's great. I mean, hell, I'm all for it, but the smart thing to do, wouldn't you want to know what you're putting into your body, you know?
Well, yeah, that's just it.
Yeah. These testing kits are awesome. That's a very responsible, smart thing to do, you know, I believe.
Well, and it's kind of the same argument as opposed to, like, brickweed that comes across the border. You have no idea what pesticides have been sprayed on it. You have no idea what's been put on it, you know, and it is a risk that you take whenever you get that stuff. The stuff that comes from Colorado and everything else and from dispensaries doesn't have that issue. It is grown in a sterile environment. It is grown in good conditions. It is taken care of. It doesn't have any chemicals and things like that. put on it. And the chemicals that are put on these natural smoking alternatives, these incenses, as they're called, legally in shops, you can't go in and ask for the stuff by name. It's kind of like you can't go in and just say, "Yeah, I want to buy a bong." They ain't selling you jack.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Water pipe, brother.
You ain't buying a book of matches now. No. Thank you very much for coming in, though.
Please leave the store.
Yeah. You know, it's a water pipe. You know, and it would be looking for incense is what you're looking for.
Right.
And, you know, it's sold under many different names, but the K2 stuff and everything else, it just, it's something to me that really started taking over with a lot of people because it kind of hit this hip trend where it was there, and people were using it absolutely to still use while they were on probation and stuff like that. But
you've got that aspect of it, and you got it's cheap as fuck.
Well, it's cheap as hell.
Yeah.
It's cheap as hell.
Yeah.
It really is.
So you got two of the best qualities right there. It's like, shit. It's like, dang, you know, this is going to go over big.
But like I said, like I've seen somebody have a panic attack using some, you know, and it wasn't pretty. It wasn't nice. I can't imagine if somebody's out in public or something like I've been out in public having a panic attack. Good God, I passed out at one point. I can't imagine that if you're in full-on trip-out mode, if you're in, like, you know, Steve-O was explaining earlier before the broadcast about a salvia experience, and I never personally had a salvia experience. Mm-hmm. I tried it a few times, and it never just rang the bell, I guess. You know, it never did what it was supposed to do for me. I know people that have smoked marijuana and not gotten high, you know. Things affect people differently. Some people can have one or two beers and they're drunk as hell. Other people can have six and go, "Hey, what's up?"
Right.
So, but you know, what about you? Did you ever have a salvia experience?
Yeah, have you ever done
that? Yeah, once, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see like El Diablo or something, bro? Mm-hmm. What? I mean,
no.
Expound. Tell us about it.
Well, the girl that I was dating, she said that you might flip out, so she was there comforting me, and so that was kind of a weird aspect of going into and whatever I was about to experience, and so she's just, like, rubbing my chest, she's like, everything's fine, and then I just see, like, these, like, kind of greenish-looking flames just, like, going up the wall, just all the walls, coming up from the corners.
Crazy.
And then it goes up into the air vent.
Yeah.
And then I reach out, and I'm like, I gotta go up there. And she's like, "Nope, you're not going anywhere." I'm like, "I have to go into the air vent." And then I just kind of start flipping out, and I get really paranoid, and then I just get up, and I'm like, everything's fine. I need something else. And then I was like, reaching for a one of those strobe globe lights.
Yeah.
And I thought that would calm me down. Then I turned off the lights and turned that on, and it flipped me.
Whoa, you could do all that?
How long did it last?
Like 15, 17 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And you had the concept of time during that.
Yes. I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it all very well.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, not everybody has the concept of time during a hallucinogenic experience.
I lost the
concept
of time.
But it's not hallucinogenic.
Well, I mean, that sounds pretty hallucinogenic to me. If you're seeing green flames come up from the ground and you're wanting to follow them into an air vent, that to me is quote-unquote hallucinogenic.
I get what you're saying. I just feel like the trip would be hard
granted,
compared to other
granted, foods. Technically, marijuana is considered a hallucinogen. It's one of those, like, I don't know. I've never really seen a whole
you
bunch of shit.
You're seeing shit that ain't there. It's hallucinogenic.
I've seen some things, like, I've definitely seen some things on some acid in my life. I've definitely seen some things on some mushrooms that I had to, like, know, like, this is not real.
Yes.
This is not there. You know.
Yes, I love that.
And,
I miss it.
Yeah.
When I did that, when my experience, I lost concept of time. I couldn't see, I wasn't aware of anything around me. Like, I just saw the TV that grew into something bigger.
Wow.
And I was just... And, you know, like, totally immense or whatever, captured into the TV. And it looked like there was, like, a Mickey Mouse or something, but it was just craziness going on. And, but then slowly, as I was coming out of it, like, reality from the sides are starting to fade back in slowly, and I can see my girlfriend's face a little bit. And
I can definitely say that, I had some intense experiences in nitrous rooms. I had some I had some intense experiences in nitrous rooms at raves and parties and festivals and stuff like that. And those were pretty wild. But, you know, there was a bunch of stuff that, you know, I guess just never really, like, you know, I was telling Steve-O on the phone the other day, like, ecstasy. I said I would try it once, and the one time I got it
was
it was bunk, and it didn't work, and I was like, well, that's the one time. Never happened.
Really?
So, you know, that's...
Might have been a good thing, too.
I considered that my sign from the universe, that was your one time.
It is a good feeling, I'll tell you that.
So, never had that experience, but understand it from a lot of people. And, you know, it's one of those strange ones that your brain literally does not recover from.
You're right.
Whenever you go through extreme use of ecstasy, it literally burns out your serotonin uptake.
I've heard when you do CAT scans, there's holes in your brain, I've heard.
Well, it shows the dead receptors and stuff. And as opposed to cocaine, other drugs that use those up, and definitely, you know, that's what's overpowering and shooting out the joy drug that you're getting in whenever you do any of this stuff. Whereas those receptors will restore themselves with other drugs. With hardcore use of ecstasy, they do not. So people who use enough X eventually just literally can't be happy. And it's like, ooh, that's just kind of like bone-chilling to think about. You know, and it takes some pretty hardcore abuse of ecstasy. And I know some people that, like, whenever they rolled, it was like they'd take, like, five tabs.
Oh, well, Jesus,
you know,
Jesus.
Stuff like that.
No, I never did that.
That's rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew people that were hardcore, but I knew people that were big into the rave scene and stuff like that, you know. And I enjoyed going to raves back in the 90s. I would go there, and I would end up hooking up with my acid or whatever, and then I would make my merry way off. I would rarely do it there, you know. I would save it for a different experience. But to me, it's something that has to be respected always, and it's, you know... I think it's a show of our society, the fact that we have these things that are coming out, the fact that we have these synthetics that are coming out as an option and being sold as an option, and being given as an option, when the more we see them, the more dangerous they're getting. You know, they you didn't hear about these cases too frequently back in, I guess, 06. 07 was probably the first time that I heard the word spice kicking around.
Really?
It was right as I was coming back from Maine that I first heard it. And, you know, people were using it and stuff like that. I was like, I don't know, okay, whatever, you know. And then I ran across somebody that used it and tried it, and I was like, it's all right, you know. It's not anything crazy, but, yeah. I don't know. I think it's the readily available.
Yeah.
Like I said, being able to find it like I did at a dollar store.
Yeah.
Damn. You know?
Like, I found it behind the counter of a dollar store.
Holy shit.
You know, it's being sold at some, like, gas stations and stuff like that. So the fact that it's being sold like that, I think, is hugely irresponsible. It puts it into the realm of anybody being able to get it. As opposed to going into an individual shop that purveys things of such repute. And, you know, people go, nah, you know. they're not going to sell it to you much more than a dollar store won't.
Right.
You know, and to me, I guess that kind of stuff shouldn't have to exist to begin with. We should have deregulation. We should have... decriminalization at the very least of marijuana. And that's just my view on it, going into other stuff from...
So you definitely don't hear these stories of people going to ER using just natural marijuana.
Not really.
It's a synthetic
shit.
Now,
you have heard some stories of people, like there was one that was actually pretty famous, and I can't remember who the woman wrote for. If it wasn't the New York Times or something, but it was right after Denver legalized and everything, and she went to do a piece, And, you know, she smoked in college, whatever, but she hadn't smoked in years and got an edible and ate a brownie and had, like a trip. You know, because, like, she ate, like, this entire brownie and didn't realize, like, you know, even experienced smokers and stuff, you
eat her tolerance and all.
Well, you eat a little bit and you see what happens. You know, because even if you smoke regularly, that is ingesting it in a totally different way, and it's a cumulative effect, and the more you put in there, the longer that's going to last, you know, because it's going to take your body longer to digest it, and that whole time it's excreting it into your system. And that's what she didn't realize. She waited like an hour and a half or so, and nothing had happened, and she was like, well, I guess I'll eat the rest of it. Hump. And, yeah, and from that point on, had a crazy experience. So, it can happen. Do you ever hear of an overdose of just marijuana?
No.
You hear of, like, an overdose of marijuana with something else or with alcohol involved.
Right.
You know, but marijuana in and of itself, I don't think, has been blamed for a death.
Right.
In 1,000 or so years, something like that.
Right.
But on that note, and talking about getting high and enjoying things in life.
You.
Let's kind of move it on and start getting high and listening to a little bit of this vinyl and let that seep into our brains. Because for sure. The vinyl stuff that Nelson brought tonight for Vinyl Night, the artist is Monad, and the album is Moira. And it is some really, really spacey ambient stuff. It's incredible to me that you're into that genre.
Oh, yeah.
And explain to us how you came upon this album and why you wanted to share it with us tonight.
I've always been interested in this genre of music. First got into it with Stars of the Lid, which was originally an Austin band, and then they are now based out of Sweden or Copenhagen. But I got into this album through this incredible app and website. It's called SomaFM.com.
Okay.
And they have multiple channels, but they have an app. It's free, which is totally dope, commercial-free music. And they have a lot of channels. One of the channels on there that I frequently listen to is called Groove Salad. And it's just...
Groove Salad. What a name.
It's great. Their undertone to it is a nicely chilled plate of ambient beats.
Yeah. That's what we were listening to in your truck the other night. Yeah, that was some good stuff.
It's great. It's very, you know, morning, evening, afternoon. It's just this constant, nice, chill vibe. You know, no lyrics, little lyrics. For the most lyrics I've heard that have been on there is specifically... not Portishead, but Massive Attack.
The
iconic one with the lady listening.
Yep.
Or singing, excuse me. Anyways.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into them. It's through Soma FM.
Totally. Well, let's go ahead and cue up the first track and get that ready over there, Needles.
Thank you.
And that first track is just absolutely amazing. I mean, just to even listen to it in the background here is... It's very ambient. It's very calming. But it makes you feel like you're going somewhere. It makes you feel like you're traveling. It's amazing. The repetitive part that's going on in the background.
Right.
It's interesting with just that loop, the way it represents that and shows that.
Right.
And Steve-O just rejoined us. That first track is called Aminophila. And so let's with that, let's get ready to bring in the second track here. And we can talk about that one. It is Kalank, or Kalanki, is what it looks like. Yep. We have a new deck here in the studio, so it's nice.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I thought it didn't work.
Oh, no. We're rocking it. Hit it. Go ahead. This is the second track off of Moira. Kalanki. And that's the second track on that. The ambience of it is absolutely amazing. And to me, whenever I close my eyes and listen to it, I just see fields of glaciers everywhere. Like, it's very icy and cold in the sound of it.
Yes. And absolutely.
You know, it's a very imagery driven piece of music. I got a chance. I didn't really get a chance. This one kind of came on us today of, hey, let's give this a shot tonight and see if the gear works. But it was, it was great to sit back and listen to while I was actually working at my workbench. That to me is a big test of music. Right. If it actually puts me into that calm space. And this definitely reached out and kind of grabbed me and was like, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, that's nice and relaxing. And, you know, that's just a couple tracks into it.
Yeah, this one I really enjoy. This one here I can see, like, putting it on and going to sleep to it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And it's interesting to me, because I've known Nelson for years. He's literally, like we said on the Thanksgiving Day podcast, one of the first people I met in Austin. He was the first person my wife met in Austin. And to have made music with you, you know, we made a track or two once. I'm still trying to dig those up so we can play them for the people.
Dope.
Because I think it would be interesting. But I had no idea how much you are into the electronic genre and into what I've come to find out is actually like house chill.
Right.
You know, is absolutely what it's called.
House
and
chill.
I had no idea there was a whole genre of music for the stuff that I made. And, like, it's interesting for me to hear the stuff that you're into on vinyl. And it's like, oh, wow, that's very similar to what I make. And,
well, I got a treat for you next
what's
time.
What's that?
When I ordered this one, I ordered another one that's like that John Hopkins.
Oh, nice.
I can't pronounce the word. Anyways, great album.
Okay.
Released in 2001, and it's just it's real deep electronic.
Nice.
Chill. Yeah,
nice.
It's great.
Well, let's get into track three here, which is Boira. And Needles is getting ready to drop the new gear over here.
Needles.
Hitting it. There we go. Fade it on in. Track three of the album Moira by Monad. Track is Boira. Thank you. there's another one that just has that traveling feel to it, you know, where it's like you're slowly going somewhere. I feel like I'm like traveling inside of a worm tunnel, something like that.
Right.
Trying to get somewhere.
I feel like it stimulates other parts of the brain, you know?
Sure.
That's what I feel like.
Well, weren't we talking about something like that? And I brought up Stephen Halpern. Yes.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
When we were at the, for Thanksgiving.
Sure did, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You should check that out, man.
Well, and now, how did you go about finding this album, Nelson?
This was through Soma FM. They had played one of their tracks. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This album, there's a website called Turntable Labs, and I buy a lot of equipment from them, and haven't bought much vinyl from them, but they had Record Store Day sales going on, so they have 15% off, and I saw it, and it looked interesting, and it was under electronic, and so I just previewed a couple tracks from it, and I bought it off the limb like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and I mean, you sent me the digital or the link to it, and I actually listened to it there. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could actually listen to the entire album.
Right.
You know, and sample the whole thing. So I intend to get a digital copy of it.
Yes.
It's phenomenal. Great, great music.
You can use the download card.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting to me the way that this music has actually started a movement. I remember being on the Avant Garde show in the 90s, and it was on the fringe of a lot of the artistic movement.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the art students from Rice University would come on the show, a lot of the jazz students that were making interesting odd brass pieces and stuff would come on, and it was a lot of four-track, you know, really oversampled, wild stuff.
Right.
And that's what my music was premiered as, was avant-garde. And I've always kind of considered that to be the genre, but it really is more in the electronic realm.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, and I've kind of had to adapt myself to that. A lot of my pieces were, and still are, in the 20-minute to 40-minute range. I like to write long pieces. So
right.
For me, it's tough. Like the last album that I did, Gemini, was interesting to me because it is in that golden range of 28 minutes. So it was kind of a challenge for me to write a song. And the project I was with, Shakuhachi Jones, really pushed me into writing songs that were in the 4 to 5 minute range now.
Yeah.
We're actually getting ready to flip the vinyl over here.
Flip the vinyl.
So.
Hear us live on dudesandbeer.com.
That's right.
Four tracks on this, and look at that.
Yep, that's what I said.
Hear the vinyl we're playing.
That's what I said. So the next track that we have, first track on side two, is Rhea. And I found this one really interesting whenever I listened to it today. It kind of comes out a little bit different than, and let's go into the track if we can a little bit. I love hearing how a track develops. From the beginning, but I really like hearing where a track goes.
Yeah.
So let's hear where one of these is going here and kind of listen from Rhea from the middle to the end there and see what we can check out. We ready back there, Needles?
Yeah, we're getting set.
You got it, Needles.
Sweet. Sweet.
Get it, Needles.
Nelson Needles Kugel on the record track, dropping the needles.
Dropping the needles.
Drop your needle.
With the
drop
vinyl love.
Needle.
Here we go.
Drop
this
that
is
needle.
Track 4 off of Moira by Monad. Track is Rhea. Thank you. And that's the wrap-up of Rhea. And like I said, you can really hear where he goes with one of those tracks in that one. You know, it's just absolutely moving, the way he actually uses the sound to travel things along left to right in the stereo field as well as forward.
Yeah, I feel like it really gets into my head when they do that, you know, the way they produced it like that.
Well, and it's also the fact of carrying on themes from the present tracks that have already happened. And as we move into Sinking Stream, the next track, we can hear a little bit more of that. There it is. Yeah, and just the textural nature of this one with the little wood sounds clacking back and forth between the left and the right speaker, it provides a whole different dimension. Like I said, as it goes forth through the album, you start having more dimension in the sound. It starts off, like I said, very cold, very icy, and as it moves forward, it starts getting warmer. Mm-hmm. You start getting more of the sounds of wood, things like that, like what was going on in the background there, the clacking, the click, 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 you know, nice wood sounds that are very naturally calming.
What was interesting while we were listening to that track, you were talking about taking the bells out of old analog phones, and then putting them in a pond and kind of getting that, what I consider like a Tibetan singing bowl, but miniaturized. Yeah. But just bringing that up because of this music, just calming you down, like your thought pattern almost. It's just like thinking about calming things.
Exactly. And you know, I'm a big believer in that, especially when it comes to music. I'm an appreciator of all forms of music. My range is phenomenal as to what I have as a music collection.
Right.
But what I listen to, I take very seriously, and I am very careful and selective of what I listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I truly do believe that we are moved by vibration. If you're listening to songs that are angry, you tend to be a little more cynical.
We're beings of vibrations.
Yeah, you know, I try to listen to a lot of stuff that is inert. I try to listen to a lot of stuff that's like classical music.
Right.
I'm trying to listen to more music like this, more music that is arranged more in the electronic realm, and more in the analog synthesis realm, where it's not necessarily vocal overtones. Lyrics, things like that.
I'm just now recently getting into this kind of genre of music, you know, like ambience or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's really, you know, before I'd never really listened to it, and I'm finding it more intriguing lately because, I mean, like just hearing this album itself, the few tracks that I've heard, it really does to me seem like it stimulates a part of the brain, you know. To me, one time I used a neurophone device by Patrick Flanagan, and where you're hearing with your frontal lobe, and it's, I guess, through vibrations, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not sound at all. Mm-hmm. And you're not using your ears.
Yeah.
And you're using the frontal lobe. And so...
Well, what it actually is a resonant vibration against your skull that's using your skull as a speaker.
Oh, okay.
Is what's happening.
Oh, that's what it,
and there's a lot of research into that. And it's been used in advertising, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it before, where they literally used it for banana sales in Norway and showed that, like, it increased banana sales by, like, 80%.
Oh, wow.
Because as people got right there next to the banana thing, like, they heard an ad about bananas.
Oh, wow.
It was like, oh, wow. But that's the only place that you could hear it. And it's very narrow and focused, and it literally vibrates your skull at a frequency.
Yeah.
So nobody else around it hears it.
Cool.
Until you're in that zone.
Very
and it's pretty wild, the technology. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you can get sympathetic resonators that actually will attach to any surface and turn it into a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically...
That's how they spy on.
Well, it's a piezoelectric effect. Yeah.
Yes.
Basically, if you take a speaker and wire it backward, it's a microphone. Put it up against a door, and then turn the amplifier up, and I guarantee you, you'll hear some shit. It's an old trick,
guaranteed,
but it's absolutely
you'll hear
true.
Some shit.
You can use a straight-up home stereo speaker and do the exact same thing. You know, plug it into a guitar amp, put a quarter inch, you know, strip it down, put it into the speaker, put it into an amplifier, and put that speaker up against a door and turn it up, and you'll hear what's going on in that room.
Right. Nice.
Yeah. A speaker is just a microphone in reverse, and a microphone is a speaker in reverse.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing the sounds that you can get, and it's amazing some of the sounds that he's using that are analog, that are, you know, just utterly created naturally and altering them and using them. That's a lot of what I love doing in my music. So let's get into the next track, which is actually Litera. If I'm not mistaken, we're on track 6 here, right?
Yes.
Loving that one is the mechanical sound that's going on in the background. There's the sound
it's
of
unique.
This machine. Hand me those empties real quick.
Oh, sure thing.
And you know, there's this mechanical loop that's going on in the background.
Yes.
You know what came to my mind when I first heard that mechanical loop? I thought of the movie Silent Hill. I don't know why.
Oh, the video game. The sound scores on the video game is incredible.
Oh, okay.
Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. That really reminds me a lot of aleatoric music.
Get into that for a little bit.
Aleatoric?
You've talked about it before.
Yeah.
Whenever we did the last vinyl night.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and that's actually one of the big bands, one of the main bands that's really into aleatoric music is The Books. And the Vinyl Me Please, which is the monthly membership. Shout out to Vinyl Me Please.
Yeah.
Please, sponsors. Just kidding. Well, not really. But their November release was The Books.
Okay.
And one of their good albums is called Thought of Food.
All right.
And it's good. It's aleatoric, so we can do that at some point, too.
Well, explain aleatoric music to people.
So aleatoric music, kind of what you heard there, it's you got a lot of electronic, but some organic sounds as well, right? Like a machine working.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of aleatoric is. It's you take digitized sounds of nature or things moving, and you put music to it.
Okay.
And so they take the books are really crazy. They take just some crazy shit, just from like to rallies at high schools to
really
like people talking in public, and just put this most beautiful music you could possibly think of with like a live celloist, a guy on a crazy synth. That's amazing.
That's pretty amazing type of That's an amazing sound.
It's good. Well, and that's just it. It's more creating a soundscape, and that's what I've tried to explain to people of what my music more is trying to express an emotion, a feeling, or I did a lot of concept albums. I did one called Axon, where it was literally following the stimulus. From the point of outside to the point of the brain observing it, and what happened inside of the brain to process the stimulus outside.
Yeah.
And it kind of traveled you through the brain in that process.
Wow.
And you end up using a lot of physical sounds. I use a lot of rare earth frequencies. I use a lot of planetary frequencies and frequencies that are like almost subliminal frequencies.
Right,
they're frequencies that you can feel but not necessarily hear once it's inside the mix of the music. Like if I was to give you a pure 8 hertz tone, you would hear it, but it would be a low click.
Right.
You know, and that's all you would hear in your headphones is a click, 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 just a click every 8 seconds. But once you bury that behind some music, you'd be amazed what you can do.
Yes.
And it operates off the principle of entrainment in physics, where if you swing two pendulums the opposite way, they'll eventually match up.
Right.
And it's the same thing. If you start walking on your left foot down a hallway and I start walking on my right, eventually we will syncopate. And we may fall out of sync, but we'll syncopate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you expose your brain to certain frequencies long enough, like alpha waves long enough, it will more readily produce those waves, and you can have more creativity.
Hmm.
You can then kind of sculpt the way that your brain thinks and works. And it's kind of takes that concept to a different level using frequencies and stuff like that in music.
Hmm.
And there have been people that have done some really interesting and wild studies on that stuff. And as we talk about that, let's get into the last track on this, which is called Convection. And it was one of my favorite tracks. I think it's a great closer to the album. And
Convection.
We'll talk a little bit about that after we listen to it right here. This is the final track, Convection, off the album Moira by the artist Monad.
Thank you.
the delays that he uses in that are so absolutely phenomenal and great. And, you know, at one point you took your headphones off, Nelson, and you were like, I really love where he went with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, it's something that I used to mistakenly call my music minimalistic because it's very similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's far from minimalistic. There's so much subtlety in what's going on, even right now, as it builds in the background.
Yeah.
As the synth sound builds and the pads build to a higher register and start bringing about more light, you know, you can really tell that things are coming to a crescendo. Things are coming to a moment.
Right.
I like how it when I'm listening to music like this, it's like it's going through my head. It's not just like on one end of the head and the other, you know, ear to ear. It's like it seems like it's in my head going through it, rather than just hearing just normal type music. I'm just listening. This is actually going through my head.
I like to call it ear candy.
Oh, yeah. You know? Most
it's
definitely.
It's just so delicious. It's great with a great set of headphones and a great preamp, like a tube preamp.
Oh, yeah.
Just that rich tone. And
And for me, it's the fact of, like I said, it's the subtlety in the engineering.
Oh,
it's something that, you know, it took me years to understand. And for me to even, I was telling Steven earlier, whenever you're recording, whenever you're doing stuff, it's so easy to overproduce.
Yes. Right.
And, you know, the stuff that you've given me the last few times to listen to has really given me some strength inside, and I want to thank you, Nelson, for sharing this stuff, because it gives me some strength inside to return to my musical roots and doing what I was doing originally. Sans beat. Not that I don't love producing beats and doing the wild stuff that I'm doing with that and the cool music, but I did a lot of stuff on this realm where it was much more synth patty and just straight soundscape like this. And I really need to kind of get back to my root with that.
Right.
So
the
thank
best
you
thing
very
is
much.
At the root. The best thing is the root.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it's not that I haven't grown. I mean, even every artist grows. It's the point of you've got to maintain that. You know, you really have to remember what kind of nurtured you and stay true to that as well. And there's a big part of me that is this style of music.
Mm-hmm.
It is the complex, long piece that if you don't have 15 minutes, I'm sorry.
Right.
I wish you had 15 minutes to listen to a piece of music.
Because you need to listen to every 15 minutes of it.
Some of the best pieces of music ever written are like 20 minutes long.
Right.
You know, they're huge sonatas and stuff like that that are epic pieces and parts and movements. That the movements in and of themselves are great. And that's the end of the album, folks. That's the end of the vinyl right there.
I really enjoy music like this. I really appreciate it and admire it. And I wish like I could accomplish something like that one day or some or other. Like if I felt like it, I find that difficult to do. Is this style difficult, Chris, would you say?
For me, I mean, well, and it's kind of, I don't know. I would say as an artist, that's kind of the question of, you know, like, is it hard for you to write a lead guitar line?
Right.
For me, for years, it was easy for me to write lyric music. I wrote poetry all the time. If I didn't write like 3 poems a week, there was something wrong with me. And now for me to take lyric to paper is so hard. It's so entirely hard. It's literally a muscle that I didn't flex for so long. For me to sit down and write a song on an acoustic guitar is just, whew. It's work. But for me to make music like that, for me to make music that literally the only way I've explained it to people for years is it's actuating the sounds that I hear in my head.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I'm always hearing music in my head. I'm always hearing sounds. If I go, I mean, it's one of the things that drives me nuts going to malls and going to busy places is I'll start hearing things in syncopated rhythms.
Yeah.
It'll, you know, everything will start kind of bombarding me, and that's the only way it makes sense. And it's great, and it's cool, and it helps out in a lot of ways because I can hear everything at once and individual things at the same time. But it's very annoying, and it takes a lot of effort to filter that out.
Right.
I've kind of observed by listening kind of not just tonight but overall from like ambient style music is that like one of the secrets of kind of producing certain music like this is like you kind of have this kind of like two different like things going on, two different frequencies. Or, mm-hmm. or if you want to go that route, call it frequencies.
Sure.
You have like, say, like a droning thing, and then you have something like you were saying. It's out of sync, but then at some certain points, it's you know,
it's in sync.
It's in sync. It's you know, syncopated.
The question that you asked me, I didn't even get to answering it, and I'm sorry. The question that you asked me was, is it hard for me to make this style of music? And for me, I would say no. For me, this style of music comes naturally. It's just what I hear in my head all the time. So for me to be able to go through my synthesizers, find sounds that I'm looking for, and arrange and compose in the way that I was taught to arrange and compose, because that's how my brain thinks, I don't arrange and compose in... chordal or a notation format. I arrange and compose in a bar graph format, and it's this sound for this duration. It's kind of like if you've ever edited video and you have things in your timeline, or if you've ever edited music and you have different sounds at different times in the timeline. It's just like that.
Hmm.
And even to this day, I still very simplistically use my recording rig. I've got a very ornate recording rig, but I'm a commit to the mix musician. When I find the delay that I want on my guitar, this is the delay that I want on my guitar in all perpetuity in this track, and that's how it is. And it drives poor Alan crazy because I've asked him to mix some of my shit. He's like, oh, I want to put a delay on it, but damn it, you already put this delay on it. I'm like, yeah, I know, but that's what I want. So, you know, work with what's there.
Should have used a DI box.
But I still use my stuff in a very simplistic way, and I'm still an arranger that when I'm writing a 20-minute piece, if 15 minutes into that track that I'm recording I mess up, I rewind and I start over. I don't punch record or anything like that. I take the whole track from the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
That's a toughie there.
It's hard. Yeah. It's not easy. But that's where I feel my music comes from.
You get 15 minutes in and like, I wasn't done and I messed up. Start over.
Yeah, start completely over. And, you know, it takes some memory as to what you're doing and what you're trying to do and the sounds that you're trying to get and crafting it.
Right.
But to me, it brings about a very old school concept. It brings about a very disciplined concept and a concept of being able to get something out quickly also, where I'm not going to do 85 variations of it and see how it comes out.
Right.
I am very much a channel when I make my music like that. I don't let a whole lot of pretension get in the way. I know where I want to go with it and the sounds that I want to generate. So for me as an artist, yes, I would say it comes naturally. It comes easy for me to make that style of music.
That's awesome.
Much like for some people, it's easy for them to play the blues.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
But they couldn't play metal to save their life.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, I know pocket bass players that can play any blues groove you give them. You know, they can hang back in any rock and roll band. You throw them in a country band, they are at a loss.
Yeah.
You know, you throw them in reggae and it's like, whoa, I don't even know where the hell to hit on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for me, like I said, for me, making that kind of music kind of came naturally. Mm-hmm. It's where I naturally progressed to before I even found it, really. It was an arrangement and composition teacher that told me to keep my eye out for these certain composers. She was like, the things you're doing are way far advanced from what you know, but they exist, and you need to check out these people because they're people that use the concept that you're using. And it was like Karlheinz Stockhausen and, you know, Philip Glass, John Cage, those kind of composers. And then late at night one night, I was listening to KPFT in Houston on a Sunday and heard this piece by John Cage. And I was like, holy shit. Here's a show playing what she was talking about just a few weeks ago.
Interesting.
And I contacted them, and I was like, hey, I've actually written some music like this. This is amazing. I've been looking for this stuff forever. How often are you on? He was like, I'm on every Sunday night. As a matter of fact, next Sunday is our fourth Sunday local composers night. If you would like to bring some of your music on, you're more than welcome to. And that begat like 5 years of every month bringing in like 30 to 45 minutes of new music.
Awesome.
Like, it was just a crazy tome of music that I wrote. But yeah, it was through utter happenstance that I found it, and that I was encouraged to keep making this music, where there was a scant audience at, you know, 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. You know, occasionally this dude would call in from the Woodlands, and he would be listening and, like, painting to my music and shit.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, oh, that's awesome. Wow. Like, some dude's painting to my music.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Now. That's dope.
Your creative outlet is their creative outlet.
Yeah,
helps
yeah.
their creative outlet.
So it was pretty neat. And sometimes we'd get some really interesting callers at like 11 o'clock on Sunday, nice and drunk, talking about it. You know, like, hey, yeah, well, the artist is here if you want to talk to him.
Very cool, man.
So, yeah, I'm all about this kind of music, and I love the fact that you want to keep bringing it in. We need to look to a next vinyl night here in the next few weeks.
Yes, absolutely.
Now that we have at least some semi-working gear here in the studio, I'm working on getting my platter fixed as we speak. So, on that note, everybody, that pretty much wraps it for episode 79 of Dudes and Beer. 79, guys! 79. Yeah. I was just looking at the fact that we have 74 hours on Spreaker.
Oh yeah,
we have 74 hours of content.
Go
That's
listen
not
to
even
it
all of it. That's not even all of it. Like, go to there's more on dudesandbeer.com.
Nice.
Every episode ever is on dudesandbeer.com. So if you want to check out episodes, that's where to go. And on that note, folks, thank you so much for tuning in, as always. And please, please, drive safe, be safe, whatever you do. And hey, remember, if you can't be good,
be good at it.
Yeah!
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our live audio streams, tune in at dudesandbeer.com or spreaker.com/dudesandbeer. You can find our episodes on soundcloud.com as well as the Google Play and iTunes market. You can also find us on YouTube, Stitcher, and your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the Revolution Digital Group family of podcasts. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.